Dramatic silence.
Kingway, Spock, Spear, Locker's acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hot. Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher, bad left, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kim Peck's at, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We are about to theory. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the theory. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the theory.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday night, April 18th, 2024. It is 4:30 p.m. Pacific time. That means it's 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. And what does all of that mean? That means that we are live and that you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking right now. 646-668-2433 is our studio line. And we would love to hear from you because we have brand new Star Trek to talk about. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery, Season 5, Episode 3, Janal, which was last week's episode. We're a week behind because we have a lot of international listeners and viewers. And we want everybody to feel like they can be part of the show and be involved. That way, there's no spoilers for the episode that was on today. So that's my spiel, and I'm sticking to it. Welcome to episode 588. And my dog is barking, and that means I have to let her out, or she will stand here and bark and bark and bark and ruin the entire podcast. Don't bark to come back in. Again, if I let you out, then you're not coming back in. There you go. Okay, Emma is out. Now we can get back to the live podcast. Isn't that awesome?
Woo! Go, Emma.
I love it being live.
This is so much excitement. I don't think my heart can stand it.
I know. It's so hot. So I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and that was Emma. You just heard barking in the background to go out. And I want to introduce you guys to my incredibly awesome and knowledgeable Trekspurts. And we're going to start out in Las Vegas with Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Been a long week. Great to talk some Trek.
I know. It's Friday's Eve. I love it. Absolutely love it. And now we're going to swing all the way back to Portland where I have my triple play, my trifecta, my hat trick of Trekkies. And we'll start off with David, who's not eating a donut tonight. How you doing tonight, David?
I'm pretty good, pretty good. Really good day over here today. It's been sunny all day long, and oh my goodness, it's starting to get warm in my apartment.
You're not feeding those tribbles, are you?
How'd you know?
Because I heard some cooing in the background, and that was kind of like, tribbles are eating, and you know what happens when tribbles eat, don't you?
Well, it might not be the last of me, but we'll see.
Okay. And also out in the Portland area, we have Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm doing great, Jim. I'm feeling extremely touched because I think I'm pretty sure, if my memory serves, tonight may be the first time that you have mentioned the Pacific time zone before you have mentioned the Eastern time zone. And that just is like, you know, after all these years of hard work and these experts from the West Coast, like, helping you out, man, it just, like, is really acknowledgement of our contributions to the podcast. So thank you, man. Thank you.
You guys outnumbered. I'm vastly outnumbered, 4-1 here.
Want some of the water?
It started out, it was a 1-to-1 ratio, but you guys have gradually taken over the entire podcast.
Well, you know what they say. They say the West Coast is the
best coast.
Okay, I was going to say.
I was thinking something else, but that's all right. And, you know, while we're speaking of the West Coast, though, we also have with us our very own toy guy, Paul. How you doing, Paul?
Hey, friends. I'm doing well, doing well. It's been a crazy week. It's been a busy week, but here we are. We're back again.
Ready for some Trek talking?
Oh, yes, always.
And we also have with us on the line, we have a very near and dear friend who's from Minneapolis. We have Ryan on the line. How you doing tonight, Ryan?
Hey, doing pretty good.
What's up, Ryan?
What's up?
Hey, Ryan.
Welcome to the show. All right, guys. Sure. So you can head on over to trektalking.com. Very easy to remember. And over there you can find all kinds of fun articles, pictures of us. If you want to see if we really do have the face for radio, you can go there and see for yourself. And you can find all of our 588 previous shows all right there, ready for you to click and listen. So check that out. And while you're there, you can click on the little Facebook logo, and that'll take you to our Facebook page. And our Facebook page is Trek Talking Podcast. And when you go there, you'll see pinned to the top of our page a Live Long and Prosper saying, hey, dude, where are you listening from? And just drop us a little line over there and tell us where you're listening from. Emojis will catch my attention because, like, I'm very simple-minded. So when I see, like, flashy little colors and things, it just I levitate. Bear that in mind. And look for a heart next to your name for yours truly, Uncle Jim. If you see a heart next to your name, you definitely want to tune into the next podcast because your name is going to be immortalized not only as a fan of Trek Talking, but a Star Trek fan that's a member of our worldwide community. So, Eric, how about you get us started tonight?
Oh, man, I would love to, Jim. I love sending these radio waves out into space forever and ever and ever. That means that some alien billions of years right now might hear all about Corey Donaldson, who is saying hello to us from Lethbridge up in Alberta, Canada. That's right, our brothers and sisters to the north. We have a lot of respect for Canadians on this show. And, Corey, we appreciate your support for the podcast. And just, you know, waving right across the border there. Alberta is just so beautiful in so many areas and so many – and so much cold, so much cold. I'm not going to lie, but we love it. Thanks so much, Corey. Also saying hello this week to Russell Garvey, who's checking in from Lancashire. Is that
Lancashire?
Lancashire, lad. Lancashire, England. I am embarrassed that I didn't know how to pronounce that, but now I do know how, and we have a lot of support for this podcast over in the UK. Really appreciate your support, Russell, and thanks for checking in from Lancashire. Heath Burnside is saying hello to us this week from Dunfermline, Scotland. Is that right? Flying that Scottish flag and saying hello. And, you know, we had a lot of fun, as I was saying the other week with my daughter when we were in the UK the other day, saying, well, you know, if it's not Scottish, it's crap. Maybe Heath agrees with me. I'm not sure. Heath Burnside, thanks for checking in from Scotland. And last on my list is Sharon Diane Hertz, who's saying hello to us from Saskatoon, Canada, in the middle of the Canadian prairies. Oh, another really beautiful area that you just got to be willing to be away from civilization. But man, once you get out there, it's something else. So Charles, I'm going to spin this globe over to you, brother. And who'd you like to say hello to?
Well, let's start off with one. Welcome to Shrimply Pibbles from Georgia. Welcome. Welcome to Julie Ogley from Missouri. Top fan Douglas Todd from Cleveland, Ohio. Let us know he's there. And also Christine Baker, who says, hi, I'm from Cape Town. So from that, keep it on. Who's on your list, David?
Hey, yeah, thanks. I would like to say hello to Donna Cole from Indiana. Thanks for listening. I have a top fan here, Corina Haga from Michigan. Wow. All right, and thanks for listening. My next one is Brian Cross from Casper, Wyoming. Hope you're not seeing too many ghosts over there, but yeah, thanks for listening. Last on my list is somebody in our state, actually, from Bend, Oregon. I would like to say hello and thank you for watching to Rishon Yi. or Roshan. I'm not exactly how to pronounce that. Sorry if I butchered it, but I'm going to give it to Paul now. Hey, Paul, what's on your list?
Hey, David. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. So first of all, we're going to go back over to Europe, and we're going to say hello, and thanks for listening to our good friend Jim Hillis in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Magnificent city, sir. So great to hear from you. We have Star Trek fans just about everywhere out there. We're back in the UK. We're going to stay here for a while, it looks like, because now we have Nicholas Nedza, who's Leicester, UK, but lives in Bristol now. So moving from one part of the land to the other there, it sounds like. But Star Trek enthusiasm stays constant. Outstanding. And next up, we are going to cross a couple of borders here and go over to Hamburg, Germany, and top fan Kirsten Spratz there. Fantastic to hear from you, Kirsten. Hamburg, of course, absolutely magnificent port city that if you've never seen it, it is just absolutely, absolutely stunning. Really, really amazing. A lot of great landmarks there. Definitely worth a trip. Great knowing there are Star Trek fans there, too, with their flags flying proudly, Kirsten. So great to hear from you. And over not too far away, our good friend Peter Smith in Los Santos, Spain, is saying hello as well. All of you together, a wonderful reminder that Star Trek is living large, way beyond the borders of the humble United States. It is a global phenomenon, always has been, always will be. It's nice to be united by that. Isn't that right, Uncle Jim?
Absolutely, and we're going to continue on by thanking our awesome fans around the globe, although my fans are all here in the continental U.S., but that's okay. We want to say thank you to Doug LaCourse, who says he's listening to us in the frozen waste of Praxis. No, wait. I'm from Maine. I get those two confused all the time with a winking emoji. Hey, you know what, Doug? I'm right there with you, especially the last 2 weeks when we got over 4 feet of snow. I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you. We also want to say hello and thank you to Wes Huntington, who's listening to us in Ryan's home state of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thank you, Wes. We also want to say thank you to Conrad Scout, who's near Rochester, New York, the home of Kodak. And last but definitely not least, we want to say thank you to listening to Stephen Brofam, who's from Cleveland, Ohio, and he's been a Trekker ever since TOS in 1966. So, wow. There you have it. If you guys would like to be mentioned in a future fan shout-out, just head over to our Facebook page, Trek Talking Podcast, and tell us where you're listening from. And leave some emojis. It gets my attention. So thank you so much. So every Friday, I put up a post on our Facebook page asking you what you thought about last week's episode. And we collect those scores, and then we tally them up to see what you guys, our Facebook fans, thought about the episode. So we're going to be talking about Janal, which was last week's episode. And Eric, what did our Facebook fans have to say?
Well, Nanjin Tam said 6. I like the first episode much better, and a little smiley licky face. Thanks, Nanjin. Mike Empey said this was a great episode. I would give it a solid 9. Wilson Cruz seemed to have a lot of fun as this Janal character. And the crew interactions with Commander Raynor was something else. He's got a lot to learn about this specific crew. Ryan Thorne, hey, that name sounds familiar. Gave it an 8.
Huh?
I like the episode. We're going to need more information on this, Ryan. He gave it an 8. I like the episode, but the way it flows was off. What was put in the arm? Okay. All right. Let's talk about that in a minute. David Lamoureux gave it an 8. If the symbiont had been Dax, it would have been a 10. David, there's more than one symbiont in the world. But we appreciate your opinion. Papuza Maru said, I loved it. 8+. I didn't like the ending. How did she get on Trill? Thought they had great security. Oh, interesting. They did talk about how great their security was. Thank you so much for that. Top fan Paul Schell gave it a 9. Larry Kimbrough, a top contributor, said, I give it a 7. Pairing Tilly with the new number one was funny and still serious. The speech at the end where he walked in and was able to give insight into each of the crew was cool, but her comeback was even better. It showed that the talk she was given in episode one of the season about why she was needed as a teacher at Starfleet really struck a chord with her. Ooh, nice follow-through on that. The rest of the episode was kind of standard, but Tilly is always worth a 7. D.L. McDowell gave it a 10. Joe Dolahan, a top contributor, said 8. Discovery seems much more Star Trek-y in the later seasons than it did in the beginning, even noticing that the rating has gone from TVMA to TVPG. I did not notice that. What I am down on is a trend in a lot of sci-fi making everything video game plots. What I am down on, so I think he likes that. Go to this planet to find this MacGuffin, and then go do it a bunch of times until you meet the final boss. Yeah. So what you're down on, I can't tell if you're down on that, like in the old school way, like you're down, like that's cool, or if you don't like it. It seems like maybe Joe doesn't like it. So I'm going to go with that interpretation. And I'm sorry, Joe, if that's wrong, but I think Joe doesn't like this kind of like MacGuffin, like treasure hunt type thing.
I get
happening.
That feeling too.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks, Joe. And last but not least, Joyce Walter gave it a solid 10. So that, you guys, gives us a fan score for Janal this week of, drumroll please, an 8.3, which is pretty respectable. We've been in the 8s every single time. What was it last? It was like an 8.9 or something last week, wasn't it? So it was, you know, down a little bit from last week, but right in line with Red Directive, our first episode of the season in terms of the fan score. So let's talk about it.
So, Ryan, since you're with us and since I read one of your comments, do you want to jump in and get us started with why you gave it an 8?
As somebody gets into that training again.
Okay.
Be organic.
Okay, hold on,
let's
Ryan.
Roll.
Yeah, let's just roll.
What do you think, Ryan?
For me, like I said, the pacing was good, except that when they kept going back and forth between the couple and then back to the, you know, the crew going around and then, you know, trying to figure out the clue and then trying to, like, hey, wait a minute, something's, like, you know, it just seemed like it was back and forth a lot.
Okay, cool. But you're sticking with your 8?
Yeah.
Okay, he's sticking with his.
Yeah,
like
I said,
that's his score.
I enjoyed it. It was really good. It just, like you said, just kept bouncing back and forth.
All right.
You asked Ryan something about what was put in the arm. What did you mean by that?
Well, at the end of the episode, something was put into Discovery. I don't remember her name, but into her arm that.
Like on her clothing.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe a tracker of some sort.
It's sort of like
they
soaked into the clothing almost or something, didn't it?
They told us with Luke in Ready Room that it was actually a time spider, whatever the hell that is. So I guess we'll find out.
What?
In tonight's
episode. Time spider.
Yeah. Yeah, the clip they showed on the Ready Room, apparently this spider gets into the ship's systems and disrupts the time.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they only show you a little short little clip, you know, to begin with, but we'll have to watch tonight's episode to find out exactly Time Spider is and what it does. But that's what they refer to it as in the Ready Room, a Time Spider. So who knows what that is? I haven't watched tonight's episode, so I haven't a clue. And I do that on purpose. So, Charles, you want to jump in next and give us your score, your take on the episode?
Well, sure. Let me jump in back to notes because as we missed trivia, we skipped a lot of cadet training. So let me go through a few things that we caught in this episode. Back in DS9, Facets, season 3, episode 25.
That's
when
right.
We saw Dax do the Zatara. I'm not sure the pronunciation on that. But we saw her split all of her hosts to different people she could speak to them. This was interesting. Did anybody notice? And who was
I
at
loved
the bar?
It.
Who was who? Yeah.
Well, there were
there
was a Ferengi, and he was serving Sluggo Cola, which we saw on Lower Deck.
Easter of Sluggo Cola, but we also got Ferengi in there, which means we're kind of doing a little remnant of Quark. And also 10 forward. This one many people might not have caught. TNG, Lonely Among Us, Season 1, Episode 7. You see people, when you see the table where they're where Saru is talking to the group, and you see somebody looks like a lizard-type group. That's the Soleil, who were first seen in that TNG episode. And then at one point, we see Michael doing Michael was suggested to do some Vulcan praying. And we see her doing a very similar form to what Spock did in Wrath of Khan. It's been a day since I've actually gotten a chance to see the movie. I saw the show. I saw it Tuesday. So I think I leave a lot of stuff open to everybody else. But it was a good episode. I like what they did with it. I like the trouble with the down to Trill. And I agree with the host, the fan comment about Culber and the fun he had down there with the character. I think that was an interesting change for that actor to play this Trill. And definitely him having fun with it. Also, Captain Rayner. We get an interesting point of view with him with his 20 words or less questions. But I think it's rather interesting how little what he gets little quick comments on it, but then he can catch a little bit of what people's interests are. He didn't spend some time really getting to know, I think, the crew a little better. Yes, David, it is a cat. With the score I've been giving these past few weeks, I'm going with another 9.
All right, so we got a 9 and we got an 8. And how about you, David? You want to jump in here next?
Sure, yeah. It was an okay episode, I suppose. Still another key that they found. I'm wondering if they're going to be doing each key every episode, which means, because there's only 10 episodes, right? And it looks like there's only, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pieces to the puzzle. So, I mean, they might skip an episode here and there, but getting there, I don't know. This one was really slow for me. There was a lot of back and forth, like what Ryan was saying, like, you know, just kept going back and forth, but it was just kind of slow on my end for some reason. It was just like kind of wanting it to get to the end so I could see what the puzzle was all about. But I did like the one thing that I did like about this episode was at the very end there when Culber and Michael and Book were going to go get that puzzle, and they came across the alien life form of Trill, which I can't remember the name of now, but turned out that Culber or the Janelle was testing them. That part I actually didn't see coming for some reason. But to me, it was interesting. I did like the whole Rayner scene where he was like getting to know the crew in his way. I thought that was very interesting as far as his character goes. And so it just made it seem like, you know, he was going to be stubborn, but turns out that he actually didn't really know how, I guess. The way I got it was that he didn't really know how to interact with crew, because on his ship, apparently, everything was, you know, type and ship shapes and so. So it was just kind of like going to a different ship. He got to experience what it was like being among crew who were more open. So to me, I actually enjoyed that scene, and the whole 20 question thing, I thought that was kind of funny. And when Tilly was saying, you know, trying to get her point across, and she ended up just about to call him something, but he was like, oh, no, that's 20 words. Okay, that's it. And Tilly, I thought that part was kind of funny. So
I like how Tilly called him out right there, right?
Yeah.
And sort of like, you know, she's like, no, this is what needs to happen. And he, you know.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I liked how she counted it off on her fingers, too. One word, two words. She couldn't. Oh, that's 20 words. I can't finish.
Well, and it, yeah. Yeah.
I think they're using her in a much better way in this episode.
Yeah. I think she definitely had a better performance this episode than the last two. For some reason, the last two, it was just very awkward and didn't seem like Tilly. I was just like, what's going on? But this one did seem a little bit more like Tilly from what I've seen in the other previous seasons. So I'm glad that they brought her back, her old self back. But overall, this episode, like I said, it was really slow for me for some reason. I don't know if it was because I'm tired or whatnot, but I don't know.
Everything's a little slow.
It's because you're old, man.
Yay.
Yeah, you got ADH or something, you know, like some just old people
yeah.
get that. Well, I gotta take a nap. I'll be back later.
To me, this particular episode, I gave the other two pretty low numbers, but this one is still gonna be pretty low on my end. I'm thinking this is probably, I'm gonna be giving this one a 6. It was just really slow. I didn't really like where it was going at times here and there, and it was just kind of like I was just waiting for the end, which surprised me, but it was still, you know. Yeah, so
you're hovering in Paul territory here.
Hey, Paul, welcome.
Well, Paul, speaking of Paul, you want to jump in next?
David, I appreciate the assist, brother. So thank you. Thank you. I find myself agreeing with a lot of what you said, David. Yeah, for me, the pacing was really not great in this. It was a little slow, and I just felt really detached from a lot of what was going on. I didn't really see the point of it even being on Trill, frankly. I mean, it seemed like it was like, we want to have that be a thing, so we're going to make the episode take place there. But what real... You know, it didn't seem to have a very cohesive theme, and I think I really find myself relating to the comment from the one person that Eric read earlier, who's saying it's very video gamey, right? It's like, oh, we're picking up our next thing here and moving on to the next level. It has a, you know, very mechanical kind of construct to the way the season's built, and so as a result, it kind of feels a little plodding. Right, you know kind of what to expect. Every week they're going to get a piece of the puzzle, and then they'll go to the next place and get the next piece. I mean, that's pretty predictable, and so there's very little suspense for me with that, unfortunately. So yeah, and I just the whole troll culture, the way they were depicted, you know, was kind of a little, I don't know, it just didn't seem very realistic to me. It was just very kind of, you know, I don't know, it just didn't work. I like Rainer a lot, right? I think that was probably my favorite aspect of the episode. I like that he just doesn't – he's not fitting in, you know, and he just doesn't, right? And he's not really, at this point in time, happy to. He's kind of happy to – he's perfectly content to be a square peg, and he's just like, all right, well, and I think he's, you know, in some, you know, you have to ask yourself, because we're still learning about this character, and he's interesting, but is he still licking his wounds at basically being demoted and having to be in a secondary role that he's never been in before? I suspect that we're going to end up liking this guy, and that he's going to evolve a little bit, and that he's not the, you know, the dick that we are getting a look at, you know, to initially assess him. I think he's going to be, you know, a good dude. But I agree that scene with those, the dynamic with Tilly and just, you know, his, you know, it's like kind of, I'm sure all of us have worked for bad managers at one point or another in our careers. Right. And he's definitely coming across as that, you know, bad manager who thinks he knows everything, but really it's like he's knows nothing and he has very little perspective. And he's certainly not going to be somebody that his direct reports galvanize around. It's not at all. So yeah, but I'm enjoying that dynamic. I like Callum Keith Rennie as an actor. I think he's really great. And so for me, he's a real bright spot here.
I think he's going to be like Captain Shaw was on season one of Picard. You know?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good analogy. Or Lorca, you know, or he's basically kind of, you know, someone whose personality is against the kind of, you know, goes he's swimming upstream against the way that most people are like, I'm really well adjusted and everything's okay and I never get angry version of human beings that we see in Star Trek a lot, right? He's got rough edges.
Yeah, I have a prediction to make too. They're going to kill him off just like they did with Shaw.
I said that last week.
Lorca.
I said that last week, and I still agree with it.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
Dead before the end of the season.
We'll see what happens. Or maybe he's, you know, or maybe he betrays everyone. Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of different things that can happen. But I like him. I like the performance. I like it that he's just not as agreeable as everybody is, right? He's you know, he's drama is conflict. And I like that he's, you know, not willing to just, you know, something going on there. And I'm continue to be intrigued by it. And I'm a couple of these episodes are blurring together, so I hope I'm not getting things wrong. But this was the episode, right, just this last week, where we had Tarina and Saru navigating that whole bit with
that dorky Vulcan that you wanted to pop in the face.
Yeah, but the whole thing where he was like having to suddenly, you know, explain himself differently because he was afraid.
First argument.
Yeah, yeah, kind of their first thing where he was, oh, this is going to damage you if I do a certain thing, right? And that whole, yeah thank you. I was like, I thought that was from the Simpsons. I really enjoyed that too. I thought that was fun as well. I like the dynamic there. I like the Tarina character quite a bit, and I'm curious to see where that goes. I mean, we're seeing it. It's not like that they're just going off happily ever after. I'm just like, where's that leading? You know, where is that going? I think it's curious. And but overall, and so that's the stuff I liked. The stuff I did not like was the, you know, the stuff that to me, I can't remember the episode name, but the you know, what's the one, Eric, where Next Gen with, you know, the captain who speaks in metaphor, that, you know, what I'm saying?
Oh,
you know?
Darmok and Jalad.
Darmok,
called,
yeah, Darmok.
Yeah, Darmok,
yeah. You know,
yeah.
The avoiding the barely perceptible beast that they think is out to kill them felt like outtakes from Darmok, right? It's the whole way the effects were done on that creature. And then it's like, oh, it's just trying to protect its young and kind of a thing. I'm just like, all right. Horta, whatever. I'm just, you know, it's just that whole chase thing and hiding and you know, thorns being shot out at people and everything. It was just tedious as hell for me. It was just like not a really good action sequence. All that stuff I found really, they really seemed to be trying to put Michael Burnham in like action scenes this sequence, right? Where like, sure, there's a lot of action going on for her and Jeopardy, and I don't know, it just didn't come together for me, and I felt the pacing was not well done, so a bit of a slog for me. I feel, you know, I don't like to be negative, but again, this is six territory for me, so yeah, I would say this is a six. Hoping that we see some different things soon.
All right,
now
so
I
want to
hear what Eric says.
You're going to hear from me first, because it's my podcast. I can jump in anytime I want. So I got to say, I found this episode to be absolutely awesome. I like the fact that we have subplots going on for a change, and I'll start off with the first one, which was the Raynor thing. Raynor, to me, it's like, first of all, I love this character, but how does this idiot, was he ever a captain? He can't relate to a crew. I find that hard to believe that he doesn't know how to relate to a crew and he was a captain.
Well,
I understand.
So Jim, not to interrupt, but like you and Paul have both brought up something, and it's actually something that Tilly talked about in here, is that it's his like basically annoyance with the situation that has caused him to, you know, be a dink. And I'm not defending, and I'm going to say more about that in a minute, but I think that that was addressed just a little bit in this episode, and I agree with Paul that I hope it's addressed more in the next.
Well, I get that they're doing what they did with Shaw, and that's cool. The guy has to be a dink in order for us to like him later, and I get that. But he doesn't act like he was ever a captain of a starship. I mean, he can't relate to crew relationships. So that I just wanted to get that out of the way. And the other thing I wanted to get out of the way before we talk about it is the giant stingers that were flying around on the planet. I mean, Book gets one in his leg. She pulls it out, tricorders him, and he's fine. So they obviously the danger was not really as dangerous as they made it out to seem if Book got hit, and it was a big deal. So I just wanted to get those two things out of the way. So let's go back to the Rainer thing. First of all, I love the character, and I really like the fact that he's going to be a foil for Burnham, and I think that's what's needed. It's back and forth. I think it's going to improve the dynamic of the show tremendously. We already saw that with Tilly, and everybody's already talked about Tilly, so I won't spend too much time on it. But I did really enjoy her interactions with Rainer. They were top-notch in this particular episode, and I thought her character really shined, and it really showed why I think she's going to be able to carry Starfleet Academy on her own, because I think she's got that kind of dynamic. So I'm really looking forward to that. I like that a lot. I also enjoyed the whole why'd they go to Trill? Well, they went to Trill because they had to deal with Gray and Tal? Blue. Well, what's the guy's name? He hasn't been around in so long, I can't remember his name. Is it Tal? Eric, what's the name of the guy that's on Trill? Got the body. Is that
Gray?
Tal,
sorry, I just realized I was muted. I've been saying Gray.
Gray?
Yes.
I think it's Gray, yeah. They had to resolve the Adira, Tal, and Gray situation, and so they went to Trill to do that. And that was another interaction, another plot story that we got to see, and that was their breaking up, their teenage, they're done. And so they ended that relationship, and that's why they went to Trill, so that they could do that. So that was, I didn't mind, that didn't bother me at all, because the plot was there for them to break up. I did enjoy Jet Reno talking to Stamets about teenage love, and how she said, oh, I sound like one of those woo-woo assholes, or something Jet Reno type of line. And I love just seeing Jet Reno again. I love her character, and anytime she's on screen, she generally shines. And as usual, Stamets is completely like out in left field and has no idea what's going on. I still like their dynamic together, which was great. On the planet, I think that Culber nailed it this week. His character was just incredible as Janal, and I think he had a lot of fun playing that character, especially the line where he says, oh, this guy works out. I was just laughing. I thought that was a great line. And to see him actually do something other than doctoring was a lot of fun. And I did enjoy the fact that they tested them, because this guy, Janal, knows exactly where they go, and he won't tell them. He says, you need to pass the test. You need to earn it. And I thought that was cool, too. And I thought it was very Star Trek-y that they didn't kill, I don't know what to call them, the space bees? I don't know what you want to call the things, but the giant space bees, you know, they didn't kill them. And Book was able to communicate with the glowing forehead thing, and they were able to leave them in peace. And that right there, to me, that's what Star Trek is about. You don't go into strange new worlds and start shooting stuff up, you know. And they went in there, and their presence was perceived as an attack against their young, and the moths responded with violence. And, you know, to see them resolve that, I thought that was about as Star Trek as Star Trek could be. You know, it reminded me of the Horda with the babies, you know, no kill eye type of deal. So I really enjoyed that. I thought that was great. in my opinion, and the Tarina story in Saru. We actually got to see Starfleet being Starfleet. We actually got to see them. What were they doing? Voting on a star base, I think.
Some sort of political
correctly.
Thing.
Yeah, we got to see them. And like Charles said, we got to see a Soleil, which was great because we saw them in TNG episode one or season one. This one happened to be red instead of green, but I thought that was great that we got to see that. And we got to see a little bit of friction between Tarina and Saru. I mean, not a lot, just a tiny bit. And that Vulcan dude, man, he's going to be trouble. You know, he tried to do an end game. He tried to pull a Shelby and go around him, go around Tarina, and didn't work out too well for him, did it? So I thought that whole dynamic there with Tarina and Saru was awesome. I love those two, and I think I want to see how that goes on. So I got a Dirac. Yeah, that was pretty much the four things that I picked out. And like Charles said, when they went to the bar, and Tilly comes up to the bar and kind of slaps Rayner down, and then he kind of realizes maybe she was right, and we see the Ferengi serving Sluggo Cola at the bar. And I immediately thought of Boimler sitting in front of the TV downloading, you know, just downing all the Sluggo Cola and watching all the Ferengi TV, and I was like, that's funny. That's an example of Star Trek using a parody of itself instead of Lower Decks always being the show that parodies everything else. Well, in this case, Discovery parodied Lower Decks, which I thought was great. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I didn't have a problem with the pacing. I didn't have a problem with it jumping from story to story because there were four separate stories, and we've seen that on Star Trek ever since Star Trek was Star Trek. So I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm going with a 9.2. And with that, I'm going to leave it for Eric.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Wow, that was those are some great reviews, and I love how they're kind of like they're very varied. I think there's a lot of meat in there. I'm going to say that I think I kind of agree with both camps in some way. So I'll address the Shaw issue from – or not Shaw, Rayner, excuse me, from my standpoint. So I would say that, you know, Rayner and Shaw definitely have some similarities. But I think that they're different types of characters. I mean, Shaw was awesome because he was another person like the Admiral that could, you know, tell Picard about his sheer effing hubris and kind of like stop him in his tracks when he thinks that he could just go out and do anything. Rayner, I think Paul is right, is like a guy who in the end we're going to find out is going to have a turnaround. He's going to learn some stuff. I did think that his insights here in the episode were interesting. You know, he seems to be a dink the entire time, seems to not really pay attention to people, and then all of a sudden he has all of these insights about people. So that's interesting to me in some ways. I don't like the guy right now. For some reason, I liked Shaw right away, and I don't like Rayner here. He's super arrogant, and I'm kind of with Paul. I can't believe that he was ever, or I think it was Paul who said he can't believe he was ever a captain, or maybe it was David, but like he just didn't.
No, it was Jim who said that.
It was Jim. Okay, whatever. Yeah, it was Jim. I agree. He doesn't seem very captainy to me. I mean, I guess in some ways you could argue that he is one of these captains who just runs a super tight ship, and maybe that's what his expectations are, but clearly he doesn't like his demotion, which, by the way, I think his demotion and the whole reason for his demotion is one of the dumbest things about this season so far. I didn't like it when it happened. He made a call, blah, blah, blah. It caused some other people to react in some way, and he gets blamed for what they decided to do. It's just not a very Starfleet-y way to react to that. So I don't appreciate Rayner's demotion at all. But now that we're here and we kind of have to deal with it, you know, they're like, okay, so the guy's emotionally traumatized because he got demoted and now he has to work under this black woman and he's like this white guy who's used to having the power. So, I mean, that's marginally interesting to me. I really hope that they show why he's the right choice to be number one. I mean, if we're to show Michael Burnham's growth as a captain, we can't just show her being on the outside of the hull of a ship at warp, and we can't just show her, you know, being a cowboy in certain situations and fighting cloaking aliens and that kind of stuff. We need to show why she's a leader, like why the decisions that she makes are the right decisions to make. And if you go back in time to kind of like the beginning of Michael Burnham, that's the Michael Burnham that we started with, right? We just with like the Michael Burnham that we started with was the rogue who said that, no, you got to shoot a Klingon in the face to like get their respect. Turns out that was the right decision, and it wasn't made at the beginning, and it was stopped. And, you know, perhaps if Michael Burnham's wishes had been carried through, which is why I think the whole beginning of that season one is backwards, honestly, the way they presented it, perhaps if her wishes had been carried through, maybe the Klingons would be, you know, more respectful of humans like they are of Vulcans, because the Vulcans shot first, and it turns out they don't attack the Vulcans all the time. So anyway, that's my little soapbox on that part of it. So Rayner, you know, he's cool. They need to do more with him. They need to prove why he's the right guy, if for no other reason than to show why Michael deserves to be captain. Regarding the treasure hunty stuff here and the kind of like video game nature of the season, okay, yeah, you can compare it to a video game. Also, I think that Star Trek Discovery is tapping into kind of the episode of the week vibe here a little bit. I mean, everybody's raving about Strange New Worlds, and what Strange New Worlds did was it like broke down that serialized nature a little bit and gave us an episode of the week vibe. Well, here you go, guys. We've got a different adventure every week. You know, every week is going to feature like a different planet, a different like set of things, and yet we have this like common vibe that's going through the thing of they have to find the things and they have to put the things together to solve the puzzle. Like there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually way more interesting to me than the DMA being something that's going to destroy the universe. And like, God, that was just, I hated that whole DMA thing. It just wasn't interesting to me. I think this treasure hunt is way more interesting than that, personally. Regarding Culber, I got to agree with Jim. I think he nailed it. Wilson Cruz was amazing. He got to like play a different type of character. I know everybody's raving about it, but I'm going to get on that bandwagon because I think that he enjoyed it, and I think that it kind of shined through in his performance. So I really liked that. With regards to that, I think Lauren Wilkinson, she was one of the writers on this episode. She just joined the Discovery team, and this was actually the first episode that she got writing credit on, and I thought she did a great job. I thought the character interactions were really cool. I thought that, like, the way that Culber's Janal character was written and kind of how they sort of reveal – I kept expecting him to turn – right? Like, you kind of knew that there was this vibe of like something was going to go wrong, and Michael felt it the whole time too. And that's what I liked. Like, she projected the fact that, I'm going to keep doing what this guy says, but I know that at some point the boot's going to hit the fan and we're going to have to deal with it. And sure enough, cloaking bee moths come on the scene. And by the way, I thought the cloaking bee moths were awesome. I thought that their like fire that they shot from their faces was awesome. I thought that it was a new kind of alien that we hadn't seen before. So I thought that was really cool. So let me see, that's about the writers and such. That's about the bee moths. People already talked about Saru and Tarina. I love everything they're doing with them so far. I love that they had a fight. I love that they sort of figured it out. It was all very logical. I'm actually in awe of their relationship. They just kind of seemed able to like work through things. They're like, what do you think about this? Well, I think that we should do this. Well, I agree. Let's do it. Okay. Check. So I guess to close out my review, I want to talk about just a couple of things. The Breen have been mentioned a couple of times here this season, and I'm pretty interested in that. And I'm pretty interested about it, especially in the context of Locke, that like semi-transparent lizard skin dude who's one of our baddies on the season. I don't know that he's a Breen, but I think that he's an alien that we have never seen before, and I know that we've never seen Breen before. We've only seen their helmets, so, tie-in? I'm not exactly sure. I loved in this episode the fact that Saru had yet another kind of, like, colloquialism, right? He had that line about to rush a Saylot is to risk goring, right? And if you listen throughout the season, he's had like a few of these like little like sayings that he keeps pulling out. So it's kind of funny that they're it's they almost feel like Easter eggs at this point. You're sort of like wondering what Saru's going to say each week that's going to be kind of like folksy and interesting. I love the connection to Facets. That is an episode of DS9 that I think is pretty cool, and I like it when they pull Dax apart and kind of like look at her diaspora parts. You know, being played by all the characters on the station. So, you know, to have Culber do that, I think, in this episode was a cool callback, and it didn't feel clunky to me. And, yeah, I guess that's about it. There's a lot of cool stuff that came up in Charles's cadet trainings that were nice callbacks to, like, previous stuff. So, anyway, if you can't tell, I thought this episode was actually pretty good. I liked it better than I liked both of the first two episodes. I still can't remember what happened in the second one. I need to go back and watch it. So I'm not sure why that one just didn't resonate with me. But I thought this one was pretty good. So I'm going to give this episode an 8.5.
Well, so, Eric, let me ask you, do you think that they're trying to save money by not having Detmer and Wushakun in the episodes? They've brought in a whole new crew of people. And when Rainer was interviewing him, it's like, who are these people?
Well,
is the bridge crew that we know? I mean, are these just the cheap fill-ins because they canceled the show and they're saving money? Or, I mean,
No. Well, I don't think so. I mean, there's obviously, I don't know for sure, Jim, but here's my take on that. I actually think that they're trying to show in that scene with Rainer all of the different people that he has to kind of keep track of. So if they had only brought in the like 5 or 6 bridge crew that we're really familiar with, it might have not been enough. But when you go through that like edited together scene where they sort of show all of the 26 increments, I mean, I don't know how many there are. I didn't count, but there's got to be a dozen of them, maybe more. And it's cool to show that there is a beta shift. You know, there are people who are there when, like, Wushakun is asleep or, like, working out or something like that. So it didn't...
I'm a Betazoid working in Beta Shift.
So it didn't bug me one bit to not see Detmer and Wushakun in that particular scene because I thought we got, like, 6 or 8 minor crew in their place, and I thought that was actually really cool.
I think they're just trying to get on the Star Trek Attack Wing cards.
Yeah, maybe. They're like, who is that one person that was in that one episode? Give them a card.
But I did like the 22nd. I apologize for not doing trivia, but my trivia was all going to be from the 22nd. Because I found those interactions fascinating where they were talking about, you know, I like the Constitution-class ships. I have a neutered Tribble that so-and-so gave me, and, you know, I thought all their little comments, their little 20-second comments were great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Reno's comment was my favorite. The last time I did this, they gave me trips.
Yeah. Right. Calling back to last season. So the other thing we didn't talk about, guys, that I forgot about was that they talked about the Zenkethi. And for at least Jim and Charles and I think Paul also, who are keeping up on the comic books, the Zenkethi are a race who have come up, remember, guys, in the Strange New Worlds comics? And so I think it's kind of cool that, like, we're getting a little bit of a crossover, and they've been mentioned a couple times along with the Breen, and I'm wondering if we've never seen them on screen. They've been described a couple times on Deep Space Nine, I think, is what they're where they were first described. So I'm pretty sure that's right. Maybe we get to see them. They're supposed to be kind of like these, you know, Gornish, dinosaurish-esque characters, at least if you look at the beta canon, but they've never actually been described in alpha canon on screen, so we don't technically know what they look like. I do know that their name, I don't have notes on this, so I'm not going to have it all, it's just from my memory, but the Zenkethi, that name, is a combination of Larry Niven's Kzinti, which is that, of course, you know, that cat race from the Slaver Weapon, the TAS episode, and then some other race from, I think, like a video game or something. So Zenkethi is a name that's actually a combination of Star Trek
and
some video game, I think.
Hmm.
I believe they have been seen on Star Trek Online. I did see
does Zenkethi have?
They've appeared in the Star Trek Online, but
okay.
not the Star Trek series.
Well, I know for sure we saw them in the IDW comics,
on
too.
On DS9.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So,
cool.
You know, that could be pretty interesting, too. So maybe Homeboy with the cloaking skin is part Zen Kethi. I don't know. Who knows?
Interesting.
Actually,
so,
I actually had an interesting thought, too, about, sorry, this might be a little off from what we were just talking about, but remember when they said that the Trills had great security, and at the very end you saw that woman, Maul, I think her name was, that go through and gave whatever her
one of our listeners mentioned that
they
have such great security, how is she sneaking into Trill?
So,
Trill's inner sanctum.
Yeah, so if Book mentioned that she was of his race, I forgot the race name.
No, it's who she was trained by. It's remember, because he's named after Cleveland Booker the Fourth or whatever. So you have to separate family from blood relation when it comes to careers.
I see. Okay, because I thought he mentioned that it was his cousin's daughter or something like that, or
it,
his
right,
friend's daughter.
But not necessarily blood. That's my take on what he's
well,
been
she's
saying.
Part of the same race, though, right?
Oh,
is
she
Booker?
She's from Quajon or whatever, is she?
They didn't say that. He's Booker the Fourth, and she
Oof.
Was Booker the Third who trained him. She was Booker the Third. I don't know what the right relationship would be. A patty pot, maybe? I don't know what word you would use.
We'd have to go back and listen to what he said. He says exactly what it is when he says who she is in
episode. It just made me think
it's
that
no,
she was the same race.
It's no blood
I don't think
relation.
She's from Quajon. No. I don't think so.
It's kind of like in Spaceballs, my cousin's nephew's sister's brother's aunt was your roommate.
Well, we haven't seen her, David, we haven't seen, her forehead glow or anything like that.
Well,
that's what I was wondering.
That's how she was able to get past the security by, empathy doing something. But if she's not part of the same race, then my theory collapsed.
Well, and we've only seen Booker doing that with animals also. Yeah, we haven't seen him do it with, other
okay.
Well, is that true? Yeah, he hasn't done it with, a sentient race, right?
Being.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Right.
Okay.
So Charles, what's the overall, what's the Trekspert score overall when compared to our Facebook fan score?
Well, the Trekspert last week was down 0.9. This week we're only down 0.5. So the fans gave an 8.3, tied with the first week. And the host gave it a 7.8.
Turn on.
All right. Cool. So there you have it. So if
so,
you guys
so
like
Discovery
to,
Season 5 so far, we're liking it, but it's not – well, for some of us, it's knocking our socks off. But on average, it's not knocking our socks off yet, right?
Not until we see the brain.
Yeah, we got – now we're talking. I want to see a brain take his helmet off, man. That would be so badass.
Well, we already know it. It's Princess Leia under there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, alternate universe.
Right?
Let me use this thermal detonator.
It's Jar Jar. Okay.
I got to tell you, I am so happy able to watch new Star Trek and talk about it every week. It's a thrill.
You're like
it
every
really
episode's
is.
An 8.5 just because it's on.
Just love the fact that we can talk about it. It's great to have Star Trek back again.
No,
so
that's true.
That's awesome.
I'm a little sad that Strange New World isn't going to be until next year. Right?
Yeah, it's going to be a long
time.
Yeah,
we're going to have a gap. Yep.
A big gap. But at any rate, guys, if you would like to hear your opinion mentioned on next week's show, tomorrow morning-ish, I will put up the scores asking you to score tonight's episode, which I haven't watched yet. And so if you want to do that, go to our Facebook page, Trek Talking Podcast. Look for that post and tell us what your score is for tonight's episode and why you scored it that way. And then look for Heart next to your name and tune in next week and hear your comments read on the air. You could even call 646-668-2433 and share your comment with us live next Thursday. So how about that? Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? So anyways, this is the part of the show where we do our Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
No, it definitely was not a Klingon song, but we like it anyways. And we always start off with our birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we are remembering 9 members of our Star Trek community who have gone before us. The first is actor Charles Louis Napier. He's the actor and musician who played 2 great roles in Star Trek episodes, which were more than 25 years apart. These roles were Adam in the TOS 3rd season episode, The Way to Eden, and Denning in the DS9 4th season episode, Little Green Men. And many people do not know that Napier actually wrote the songs featured in The Way to Eden, together with Craig Robertson and Arthur Heinemann, who provided the lyrics. He also performed the vocals for those songs himself. So there you go. Charles Louis Napier would have had a birthday this week. Happy birthday as well to actor Paul Sorvino. He's the Italian-American actor who played Nikolai Rozhenko in the TNG 7th season episode Homeward. Paul Sorvino originally aspired to be an opera singer, but of course eventually built a solid career in films and in television starting from the 1970s. He's perhaps best recognized for his role as Paul Cicero in the 1990 gangster drama film Goodfellas. Thank you, Paul Sorvino, for all your contributions, and happy birthday. Happy birthday as well to Joseph Ruskin, born Joseph Richard Schlaufman. Joe Ruskin was an American actor who appeared in 4 of the 5 live-action Star Trek television series and in Star Trek Insurrection. That's right, on TOS, he played the part of Galt in The Gamesters of Triskelion. He appeared in DS9, playing the Klingon Tumek in 2 episodes, The House of Quark, and Looking for Parmok in All the Wrong Places, still one of the best titles ever. In between these episodes, he played a Cardassian informant in the episode Improbable Cause. He was cast as a Sona officer in Star Trek Insurrection and appeared in Star Trek Voyager in the episode Gravity, in which he played a Vulcan master. Ruskin's final Star Trek appearance was in Enterprise as a Suliban doctor in the pilot episode Broken Bow. He was also involved in a bunch of Star Trek video games along the way. Very impressive credentials. Joseph Ruskin, thank you so much for your contributions to Star Trek, and happy birthday. Happy birthday as well to Jabe Robinson. He's the American actor who played, who appeared as the Troian ambassador Petri in the TOS 3rd season episode, Elan of Troyes. Robinson's most well-known role is that, of course, as Caligula in the 1953 biblical epic The Robe, which also marked his film debut. And he reprised that role the following year in the sequel Demetrius and the Gladiators. He has a whole bunch of really cool sort of Roman-ish credits to his name. You should go and check him out. Jay Robinson would have had a birthday April 14th. Happy birthday, Jay Robinson. Happy birthday as well to Arlene Martell. She was the actress who played our original T'Pring in the TOS 2nd season episode Amok Time. In 1965, Martell was among the candidates for the role of Dr. Elizabeth Denner for the 2nd Star Trek pilot Where No One Has Gone Before, but she couldn't take the role because her eyes couldn't handle those silver contacts. You remember what I'm talking about? Yeah, she couldn't even wear them, so she had to turn it down. 2 years later, she was almost cast in Cat's Paw, but again, it didn't work out because at that time, people had already slated her as T'Pring. They said, you know what? We got this episode of Amok Time coming up. She's perfect for it. Let's just go ahead and cast her. Luckily, Arlene Martell was not last seen there. We also saw her in the fan film Of Gods and Men, which, of course, was one of the ones that we've reviewed along the way. That was 40 years after her original appearance in Star Trek. So Arlene Martell, Really cool role, really cool callback 40 years later. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday as well to Michael George and Sarah, the Lebanese-American actor best known in by Star Trek fans for playing Kang. Kang the Klingon, of course, started in the third season episode Day of the Dove. That's in TOS. Then he moved on to DS9's second season episode Blood Oath and Star Trek Voyager's third season episode Flashback. This actor also appeared as Jayal in the DS9 fourth season episode The Muse. And Ansara played the villain Killer Kane in four episodes of the 1979 to 1981 sci-fi series Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, which I thought was important to mention. You're welcome, Jim. Ansara also became recognizable as the voice of the DC comic characters character Mr. Freeze on various animated Batman series. That's for you, Paul. You're welcome. So Michael George Ansara, pretty cool guy, lived to be the ripe old age of 91 years old, you guys, born in 1922. We do miss him, one of our three Dahar masters. Thank you so much for all of your contributions to Star Trek. I can't believe you've been gone more than 11 years at this point. So happy birthday. Happy birthday as well to Robert Walker Jr. He's often credited simply as Robert Walker. He's the actor who played Charlie Evans, also known as Charlie X, in the TOS first season episode Charlie X. He was approached in 1997 for a role on Deep Space Nine, but was not interested in renewing his acting career at times. So there you go. We could have seen a little bit more of him in the future, but he just had other things going on. So happy birthday to Robert Walker Jr. Happy birthday as well to Peter Mark Richman, who played Ralph Offenhaus in the Star Trek Next Generation first season episode, The Neutral Zone. In addition to all of his many, many acting careers along the way, Richman was something of a Renaissance man. He was a humanitarian, a painter who actually had a ton of shows along the way, many, many exhibitions. He also wrote two novels and wrote several stage plays throughout his career. So multi-talented man, also lived to be the ripe old age of 93 years old, and we lost him just back in 2021. So Peter Mark Richman, happy birthday. And lots of love going out to you. And last, but certainly not least, we would like to say happy birthday to David Graff, the American actor who guest starred as Fred Noonan in the Voyager second season episode The 37s, and also as the Klingon Leskit in the Deep Space Nine fifth season episode Soldiers of the Empire. If you don't know David Graff from Star Trek, you probably best know him for his role as officer and later Sergeant Eugene Tackleberry in all seven of those Police Academy movies ranging from 1984 through 1994. David Graff, happy birthday to you. We love and miss you. And that, you guys, does it for our remembrances this week. There were a lot of them, but I tried to move quickly. Charles, I know you'd like to say happy birthday to some folks who maybe are still with us.
Oh, thank you. Okay, let's start off with a happy birthday to Thad Laney. Actor appeared as the Devil in Star Trek's Next Generation fourth season episode, Devil's Due. Happy birthday to Alicia Coppola, actress who played Sadari in Star Trek Voyager's first season episode, The Caretaker. Happy birthday to Sadler, who played Luther Sloan in Star Trek Bates 9, 6, and 7 season episodes Inquisition, Interior Arma, Emin, Silent Ligus, and Extreme Measures. I don't know my Latin so well. Happy birthday to Brendan Beezer, who played the medical hologram Ely in Star Trek Discovery's third season episode, Die Trying, and There Is a Tide. Happy birthday to Elizabeth Lindsay, actress who played Louisa Kim in Star Trek's Next Generation first season episode, Home Oil. Happy birthday to Saul Rodriguez, Argentinian actress who played Teresa Ramirez in the second season. Finally on my list, happy birthday to Robert Hooks, who played Admiral Morrow in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Should I ask Eric the question?
I didn't do my research. I cannot remember what his character did in that movie, so I'd have to look it up. I'm sorry, Charles.
Well, okay, well, we got a neutral admiral.
We'll have that next week for y'all.
All right. Well, Paul, who's on your list? I'm sure you got a lot for this flaming candle.
Oh, we got a few of them on here, man. First of all, happy birthday to April Tatro, a former contortionist and actress who appeared in the role of the embodiment of Isis in her human form in the original series second season episode Assignment Earth, a big favorite of mine, and I know a lot of other folks on the show as well. So great. Finally get to see what's really going on and why Gary Seven is so fond of that cat. Happy birthday to Alden Adair, who played the Bajoran T'or in Strange New World's first season episode, Spock Amok. Awesome episode, to be sure. Happy birthday to Emma Ho, a child actress who played Oriana in Strange New World's first season episode, All Those Who Wonder, and in the second season episode, The Broken Circle. Happy birthday to Faith C. Tali, actress who played Serena Douglas in the Deep Space Nine 6th and 7th season episodes Statistical Probabilities and Chrysalis. Happy birthday to child actor Ian Ho, who played the first servant in the Trek Strange New Worlds first season episode Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. And happy birthday to Michael Forrest, the actor who played Apollo in the original series second season episode Who Mourns for Adonis, and then came back and played that character again memorably not that long ago on Star Trek Continues, the online fan series, which was cool. They're nice to see fan films that reach out and connect with cast members from the original show and put them to work. Very, very cool. And happy birthday to the great Ron Perlman, who was part of the Star Trek universe from his turn in Nemesis, where he played the Reman Viceroy. But Ron Perlman's done so much more than that. Of course, many folks know him from his genre work in Hellboy, where he played the title character for a couple of great films. Always wish we'd gotten that third one, Ron. And also the patriarch of the family on Sons of Anarchy there. Terrific actor and a real firebrand. So great to be able to list him amongst the luminaries of Star Trek as well. And I'll pass this over to Uncle Jim. Well, I always do the Klingons, and I don't have that many, but I've got a couple good ones. I want to say happy birthday to Jennifer Morrison, the actress who played Winona Kirk in Star Trek 2009, Captain Kirk's mother. But I think most fans might know her from, and now I'm drawing a blank, from the Disney show with all the characters came to life there, Once Upon a Time. She starred on Once Upon a Time, which was a great TV show. And now we get to the Klingons. We want to say happy birthday and kabla to Eric Avari, who appeared as Bijek in Star Trek The Next Generation's first season episode, Unification Part 1. If you guys don't remember, he's the guy when Captain Picard wanted to talk to Gowron to get a bird of prey, and Gowron wouldn't talk to him. And so Picard says to Bijek, well, if Kern gives me a bird of prey, then he will have my gratitude instead of Gowron. And Bijek changed his tune and got him a bird of prey.
Tricky
but
Picard, man. Tricky Picard.
Got what he wanted, yep. And but you guys probably know him. He also played Yarka in Deep Space Nine's third season episode, Destiny, and Jameen in Star Trek Enterprise first season episode, Terra Nova. However, if you saw Stargate, you know who this guy is. And if you saw Independence Day, this is the guy that tripped on all the golf balls in the beginning of the he's been in a ton of movies. So happy birthday to Eric Avare and Kapla. And last on my list, we have Kathy Sheereff, the Canadian actress who played Valkyrie in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. The concubine. I think that would be the safe word to say, right? Concubine would be the correct terminology.
I think,
I don't know.
I think so. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, probably.
of Commander Poop. He blew her up. So happy birthday. As speaking of Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, guys, I've got some great news for you guys. If you're fans of Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, if you are going to be in the Schenectady, New York area on August 10th and 11th, then you can come and catch the 40th anniversary screening of Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and you can watch the movie with Robin Curtis herself, Lieutenant Savick. Adam Nimoy, the son of Mr. Spock, will also be there. David Gerald will also be there, and yours truly, Uncle Jim. And maybe you can track me down, and I'll let you touch my bat lift. And all of this is going to be going on at Fandom Fest at Proctor's Theater. So you can go to fandomfest.org. You can get your tickets. And up on the third floor, Trek Talking is going to be running the 10 Forward Lounge. And we're going to have all Star Trek all weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have gaming. We're going to have panels. We have 5 panels for Saturday, 5 panels for Sunday. We're going to have a Star Trek museum set up as well. And we're going to play Star Trek games. So if you're looking to get your Trek on and you want to meet Uncle Jim, head on over to Fandom Fest at Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, New York on August 10th and 11th. Head over to fandomfest.org for more information. And that, my friends, wraps up our birthdays, and now it's time for Star Trek News.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Black alert. Black alert.
All right. So it's time for our Star Trek news. All the stories that we're about to talk about, you can find on our Facebook page in their entirety, Trek Talking Podcast. Okay. So, Eric, you want to get us started with our Star Trek news this week?
Yeah, I do, Jim. And this week we're going to start with our segment, Shatner Says What, which we usually, you know, reserve for humorous times and that sort of stuff. But this week it's going to be just a little bit more serious because our Shatner Says What segment is all about Star Trek's William Shatner opening up about stage 4 melanoma diagnosis. William Shatner, known for his iconic portrayal of Captain James T. Kirk in Star Trek, recently opened up about his battle with stage 4 melanoma at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Dermatology, the AAD, in San Diego. This marks the first time Shatner has publicly disclosed his experience with skin cancer, shedding light on his journey with both poignancy and his trademark humor. At 92 years old, Shatner's legacy extends far beyond the realm of science fiction. While his role as Captain Kirk solidified his place in pop culture history, he has continued to captivate audiences through various endeavors, including writing, commercial appearances, and public speaking engagements like the AAD meeting. Despite his celebrity status, Shatner is equally renowned for his down-to-earth candor and lighthearted self-deprecation. Stage 4 melanoma represents the most advanced stage of this serious form of skin cancer. In Shatner's case, the cancer had progressed significantly before it was diagnosed. Diagnosing stage 4 melanoma involves a series of medical examinations and tests. Physicians typically conduct blood tests to assess blood count and liver function, along with various imaging scans to determine the extent of cancer spread. Symptoms of stage 4 melanoma can manifest in diverse ways. Changes to existing moles or skin irregularities may serve as early indicators of cancer spread. Shatner said he was, quote, breezing along, really looking good and feeling good when he felt a lump near his right ear. Shatner said his family physician told him that it was caused by a blockage in the parotid gland and that it would go away if he massaged it. Quote, so I spent a month massaging, and the movie Alien comes to mind because I don't think people who have never had cancer know how some cancers can grow so quickly, he said. So, his voice changing to a brisker tone, I went and I had this thing taken out. It was a melanoma, stage 4. After surgery, Shatner said he was treated with immunotherapy, which had him fighting fatigue. But here I am, he said, before listing a number of projects he is working on. I am really the best that I can, minus the lump on my right cheek. Shatner's journey with stage 4 melanoma underscores the importance of early detection, comprehensive treatment, and ongoing research efforts in combating this formidable disease. By raising awareness and sharing his experiences, he empowers others to prioritize skin health and seek timely medical intervention. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to learn anything from Captain Kirk himself, learn that making sure that you keep track of your own body along the way, you know, inspect things. If a lump shows up and it looks a little bit weird, go have it checked out. If that lump that you've always had gets a little bit bigger and gets a little bit sore, go get it checked out. This does not constitute medical advice, but it does constitute wise words from Mr. Shatner himself. So I really enjoyed this article, and I enjoyed the kind of like tonal shift of our Shatner Says What segment this week. Often we laugh at his humorous things that he says, but I thought this was like pretty cool to like have him coming out about this and like, you know, hopefully bringing awareness to some people who may not be as aware as they are now. So there you go. Thank you, Mr. Shatner. And Charles, I'm going to pass this new – oh, yeah. You got something, Jim?
Yeah. Well, that's why when I was going through the articles and I found this article from Shatner, it's not our typical Shatner Says What, but I felt that it was an important article to get out there to people. Because,
yeah,
you know, a lot of people, when you hear something like this from Captain Kirk, well, from William Shatner, maybe there's people out there on the edge that will say, well, you know, Shatner – maybe I should go and get it checked too. So I thought it was important, you know, for that.
I mean, there's no question here, Jim, that this guy is 92 years old. He has been to space. He has lived through stage 4 cancer. So, you know, he must be doing something right. So
he fought a Gorn.
And he fought a Gorn. So
and he fought
I just
a
thought
Gorn.
It was important. So that's why it's technically not Star Trek news per se, but I felt it was important to get this in there, so that's why.
Cool.
So Charles, right, you're going to jump right back into our Star Trek news. If Charles is with us,
or is he?
Dun.
Charles, maybe
I hit
there we go.
There
I hit the mute button.
He's here.
Hopefully we'll find a new home. Jack Quaid reacts to Star Trek's Lower Decks ending at Paramount Plus. Lower Decks star released a new post to his Instagram page following a recent announcement that season 5 will be the USS Cerritos cruise final animated adventure on Paramount Plus.
Boo.
In the post, Quaid wrote, "Hello, Lower Deckers. I'm sad to announce that Paramount Plus won't be moving forward with more seasons of Lower Decks. I can't begin to tell you what an honor it's been to be part of this show and Star Trek universe at large. I'm unbelievably grateful for 5 awesome seasons with this wonderful family. I want to thank each and every person who put so much of their hard work and talent into every episode. You are amazing. The good news is everyone who makes Lower Decks loves making Lower Decks. I could play Boimler for 17 more seasons, no joke. I'm serious. I love the purple-haired nerd. Hopefully we'll find a new home. But until then, please look forward to an amazing 5th season airing this fall. Live long and prosper." In addition to voicing Boimler, Quaid got to play his ensign in the live-action Star Trek Strange New Worlds episode, Those Old Scientists.
Okay, can we... Go ahead, Charles.
I've already seen at least 2 change.orgs trying to keep Lower Decks in place.
Okay, but let's talk
at
about
least.
This for a second, so...
Yeah,
so,
let's dive into this a little bit.
This is a good one to dive into, I think. So, Jim, do you want to go first or should I?
Yeah, so here's my question, my take, my concern is when Paramount Plus came along, they were going to be the home of Star Trek. And there was that stretch of, what, 43 or 46 weeks in a row where we got that. But ever since then, Star Trek has been leaving. They've been getting rid of Star Trek and not replacing Star Trek.
One show.
And,
one show left.
You know, they... So my concern is Prodigy has moved to Netflix, and now there's talk that Lower Decks is shopping Netflix as well. And Netflix is well known for picking up canceled shows that still have a life left in them from other networks. And my concern is, you know, suppose Discovery moves over to Netflix. Suppose, what's the purpose of Paramount Plus if these shows are going to be continued on other networks? What is wrong with Paramount? I don't get it. What's going on with them? What is the magic number with five and done? You know?
Well, I have to tell you that I'm less concerned with where the show manifests itself. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, when we were promised all Star Trek in one place, that was the whole reason that most of us got Paramount. And I think in the early years, like back in the 2017s and the 2018s, you know, of Star Trek Discovery, we all on the podcast were arguing that Paramount Plus was worth $7 a month simply because Star Trek Discovery was a cool enough show that it was carrying the network. What I'm more concerned with is that they have an absolute gem here in an animated series that has, 58 years of material on which to draw, and they're throwing away an opportunity here. Like, I suspect, I don't know this for sure, but I suspect that part of this decision is a money decision, and that the fact that you've got like your Jack Quaids and your Tawny Newsoms and your people who are getting a little bit more popular, I would bet you that they were given limited contracts to start with, and that were they to renew their contracts, they would get paid significantly more. And probably Paramount has done the math and they've said, you know what, we can't afford to pay these guys this much and still produce the show, so we have to cancel the show. What I think is the missed opportunity is the fact that the theme of this show isn't Boimler, Mariner, Rutherford, Tendi. The theme of this show is Lower Decks, and what they need to be doing is they need to be taking this awesome franchise that they've built, and they need to pass it to the next generation. We need the next generation of Lower Decks people. So we need the crew that we've seen grow up to now be elevated to officers and eventually be worked out of the show. And we need new Lower Deckers to come up and, like, continue the humor. Because, you guys, there's so much material out there. And with the going away of Lower Decks, I'm not convinced that we're going to get another show like this in the future. So to shop it around, to me, Jim, that seems like a good thing. Because at least then we have the opportunity for the show to evolve and maybe turn into something cool in the future. But this, I think this is literally a show that could go longer than any other Star Trek franchise that has ever existed. It could go longer than seven seasons if they did it right, because there's just so much reference material. They just need to figure out how to pass it to the next generation and not make us just fall in love with four characters and be stuck with those four characters the entire time, right? Nobody wants to be a Lower Decker for 17 seasons.
pull the old Harry Kim and be an ensign forever.
Well, that wasn't Harry's fault, and that's some fucking injustification. Oh, sorry, excuse me. That's some injustification. Like,
I think you should say that word whenever you can, man. Let's, like, you know, come on.
I don't like the Harry Kim thing.
Why do you think people in Europe listening to this show? Because every now and then we drop an F-bomb. I mean,
I think the Harry Kim thing is due to racist writers, but we can have an entire other show on that.
You know, my concern, what I'm worried about, why I mentioned that, is the fact that if Paramount Plus owns Star Trek, if anyone's going to produce any new Star Trek, it has to go through them. So if they keep canceling shows and Netflix or some other network keeps picking them up, that is going to have a negative effect on Paramount's ability to produce new shows, because people are going to say, well, why do I want to pay for Paramount Plus? I'll just hang around and wait till it hits Netflix, because I already have a Netflix. Because even... how many times do you hear people complain about having subscribed to watch Star Trek? It's like a broken record. And I'm just worried that if this becomes a trend, it's going to be the death knell of Star Trek, because people aren't going to pay to see new Star Trek on Paramount Plus if they know it's going to end up somewhere else later. And Paramount needs to pull their proverbial heads out of their asses and realize that they are their own streaming network and start acting like it. You know, they're not a network anymore. They're a streaming network, and they need to give the fans what the fans want to pay for their streaming network. And so far, Paramount hasn't caught the gist yet, in my humble opinion.
Well, and Jim, I guess my argument dovetails with yours, because I believe if they evolve the show and it, like, this is all me supposing that this is based on salaries of actors, and I could be 100% wrong on this, but let's say that that actually plays into it. If they could pass this thing on to a new generation and, you know, get fresh new actors, maybe even you show Lower Decks all over the Cerritos, and it's not even the same four crew every week. Maybe there's like 12 crew, and you sort of follow them in, through different episodes, through various antics. Like, that's a way that they could just keep this thing rolling.
Well, they introduced Talin. Jennifer is still hanging out there somewhere.
What happened to Jet? I need Jet. Give me some Jet.
Yeah, there's still – and there's a towel guy. Don't forget the towel guy. And something else, too. I think the episode Weege Dooge proved that when you're talking an animated series like Lower Decks, they could do the whole Klingon thing on an animated series.
Yeah, you know, they could totally go with, like, the route of the different aliens on Star Trek, and just go all-out Kardashian show.
Not the actual Kardashian, but you know. Well, I don't know if they could do an entire show, but you could certainly do, like, a B story to every show, you know, and you could, like, show that, like, tension between the Federation and the Klingons, and show the Klingon Lower Decks, and then show the Federation and Cardassian, you know, tension, and show the Cardassian Lower Decks.
Yeah, because they did it when they introduced T'Len. We saw the Vulcan Lower Decks. Then we saw the Klingon Lower Decks. We saw briefly the Borg Lower Decks, but they were just standing around alcoves. But still, you know, with an animated show, it opens up like they did with TAS in the 70s. It opens up a whole plethora of different things that they can explore, but it seems like Paramount Plus is too close-minded. They don't know what they have, and they don't know how to promote it.
I think that's what it is, Jim, is its lack of kind of like thinking outside the box, because to me, like, all of these decisions are literally made because of dollars and cents. And it's how much does it cost? How much do we expect to make off of it? Does it pencil out? And, you know, if it doesn't pencil out, the answer isn't necessarily always cancel. The answer can be, can we pivot and make this thing cool, but make it cost less? And I don't know if – I would love – not that we're owed this, but it would be cool to have some reassurance that they've actually explored that and they didn't just cancel because that's the easy thing to do. Because otherwise, as I said, I think they're throwing away a great opportunity here.
Well, Prodigy was just, boom, done. Canceled it, removed, deleted, erased from Star Trek history, and gone at the drop of a dime. Discovery was getting ramped up for season 6 when they got the cancellation notification. And luckily, Paramount let them go back and film some additional scenes to make it the final season. But that was a pretty sudden thing as well. And it just seems like these people at Paramount, they're going to do the same thing to Strange New Worlds. They renewed, you know, are they just going to come one day and say,
I don't think so.
You know,
I think it's over. I think Strange New Worlds is an entirely different animal, to tell you the truth. And I think that we should have a whole show, honestly. I would love to sit and talk for an hour about how Strange New Worlds has been the show that not only tried to keep the paradigm that Discovery sort of set, but also then tried to adapt to all the other stuff. Because to me, Strange New Worlds is a show that, like, wouldn't have existed, A, without Discovery, and B, exists in the way that it does because of Discovery. Because of the way that Discovery kind of, like, opened the doors for a lot of different concepts. But people said, you know what? I like that idea, But what I really want is I really want like a more traditional crew on a Constitution class ship with a white captain, and that will make me more comfortable a lot watching the show.
Yeah,
that's what
I
think.
Here's the thing that I find baffling, right? You know, because you guys make great points, you know, across the beam here. But, you know, I mean, are we agreed Strange New Worlds is really popular, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So unless I'm like my perceptions are really askewed, Lower Decks is really freaking popular. I mean,
it seems like it's really popular.
And it's really popular with a, you know, a very, you know, well, not very necessary, but with a lot younger demographic, right? Which is who you should be courting, you know, if you're in business, right? And it's done really well. And then when, you know, we had a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup moment this year, right? Where we had the Lower Decks live actionization of Strange New Worlds, which was a phenomenal success.
Brilliant.
That episode was a huge success, and it boosted the profile of Lower Decks for people who might have been like in that crankier, older, I only watch the original series because I go to the set museum demographic. Let me write a check for you while I'm, adjusting the television rabbit ears that I have, you know, those cats might actually be, you know, tempted to like, you know, watch an episode, right? And check it out where they previously hadn't, you know, it's extremely successful. Charles has pointed out that there's like action figure and statuette licensing happening, right? I mean, it's a franchise. There's comic books. I mean, it's popular as hell. And, you know, it's like there's no shortage of ideas, like, you know, Eric says. I mean, you could run this thing and keep bringing in new characters. It's not like, okay, Tawny Newsom's busy writing on, Starfleet Academy, so she can't do it. That's what I'm saying.
You don't need Tawny Newsom to make Lower Decks
exactly.
Awesome.
I mean, that's a terrible excuse. I mean, there's a million comedy writers out there. I'm sure tons of them love Star Trek, and you just keep evolving and keep it, you know, fresh, which is what that audience would like. So it is, I thought that, I know the streaming business is really competitive and it's really crazy, right? But I think a lot of times it's kind of like the Wild West and people are in charge who don't necessarily make good decisions. I mean, I thought it was a absolutely baffling decision to Deep Six Prodigy like they did. I mean, fortunately it has found another home and another life, and it's, you know, through the tenacity of guys like Aaron Waelke, right? It's doing okay, and probably will have a real successful life when it gets to Netflix over here, right? But getting, you know, it's like I would not think that you would be at risk. I mean, we know that they've just renewed Strange New Worlds for a fourth season, and we haven't even gotten season three yet, right? So we know that they're safe for a while. But if you're the brain trust that's canceling Lower Decks at the height of its popularity, I would put nothing past you, because it seems to me that, like, you know, you might not necessarily know that you need gas in the car to actually start it, right? I mean, I don't know that really you're in the best position to make business decisions for a franchise that has an aggressive fan base and that has had one for over half a century. So it's really bizarre to me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense.
But there you go. I mean, that's show business, right? I mean, people don't make sense all the time. And, how long has it taken? We've seen what goes. I mean, Paramount Plus is obviously a different animal than Paramount Studios, right? But how long have they been going on trying to make a movie over there? I mean,
Star Trek 4, The Fame.
Good Lord, whatever it ends up being. You know, Star Trek, the garbage generation. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. But they cannot, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when I can walk up to a box office and say, one, please. Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, that. But it's just like, these cats just, I think it seems like there's a schism or a problem culturally in Paramount Corporate, where I don't know what it is. Sometimes, I mean, you look at their social media, you look at their, I don't know if you go over and hang out with them on Instagram much, but they seem to be very pro what they've got on like Instagram. You see the marketing people seem to really market with a lot of affection. They seem to really like their stuff. They seem to really, you know, have a lot of confidence in it. You know, that's the image they put out there. But what's going on in the offices there with the people making the business decisions? They seem like they don't really know what the hell they're doing at all. And so it's really kind of baffling. I hope that, you know, we get some folks at the helm who have got some, well, affection for what the legacies that they have been entrusted to be stewards of, but also
there you go.
Making decisions that, you know, will you know last a long time. I mean, the next story that we have coming up, I think, addresses this if we have time for it. But man, it's just it's crazy. I mean, but it's a crazy business, right? It is. You don't get into show business if you're looking for, you know, stability.
I think Paramount Plus with Star Trek has the opposite problem that Disney has with Star Wars. I think that Disney is just cranking out Star Wars right and left and right and left and right and left and right and left. And they're just throwing it all out there. And I think Paramount is doing just the opposite. I think there's a happy medium there. And Paramount hasn't figured that out yet. It's like, you know, we can't just keep canceling and then promising stuff down the road. I mean, you know what I would love to see them bring back Short Treks. I think that was a brilliant idea, and it gave them that's how we got to see Captain Pike and Number One and Mr. Spock, and they introduced all these ideas through Short Treks to see how they would be received, and I think they should go back to doing something like that again. Give us a Short Trek with Captain Sulu. There's so much they could do with Short Treks, a little 10 or 15-minute, 12-minute little story, and we would go crazy. We would be totally happy.
But that's so small, man. That's so small and short. I don't think it's certainly not profitable to make something that's that short, right? I mean, I think what you do is you come up with something new, and there's plenty of stuff in Star Trek that would lend itself to that, right? I mean, I think do a big, ballsy, period-feeling, medieval-esque Game of Thrones-style Starfleet series, but it's about the Klingon homeworld. No Federation
so,
at all.
That'd
I don't
be
want to
amazing.
Do that. You hear about them every now and then, but it's so all cool. Klingons all the time, and but it's done like seriously. It's mm-hmm. done like with factions, and it's done the way they do.
The houses, yeah.
Yeah, and they do House of the Dragon and like the more serious, violent kind of Game of Thrones stuff. Give us a Klingon series like that. And that would be a massive hit. It would be easy to develop. You could get, you know, a really great cast in there. I'm telling you, it would be really successful, and it would be really pulpy if you did it right.
You know, like they did a limited miniseries, like you did with Obi-Wan and Ahsoka Tano, where it was just six episodes, six and done. You know, just do a little miniseries.
You know, they did those Star Trek Aliens comics a number of years ago, probably 10, 15 years ago. IDW did the, like, all of those little things. Like, that would be cool, right? Like, you do a season of Klingons, a season of Andorians. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think that would be great. It's more like an anthology series or things like that. But mm-hmm. it's just like acknowledging who your fan base is and catering to them. Right. And understanding that's how you make money, you know, and just like be in it for the long game. You know, it's just like I hope that, you know, Jim talks about Star Wars. Right. And they haven't really dropped the ball yet. They've done OK. But, you know, they are kind of to a degree throwing spaghetti at the wall and hope that one spoke of the wheel will really resonate and become a huge hit. You know, but you can't artificially recreate the next Mandalorian. You know, you have to really come in there and know what you're doing and be passionate about it, like a guy like Jon Favreau does, right? But where is the Jon Favreau of Star Trek? I don't think it's the guys running Discovery. I don't. I don't think it's Kurtzman. I don't think it's those guys. I don't think that there's somebody with enough vision. But we need somebody like that who is really willing to go down hard and have vision and be willing to and who knows how to please fans across the board. Right? I think that's what we need because, I mean, look at what's going on with the Marvel Universe. I mean, that's falling apart. They keep trying different things in his five new series that no one will remember in 2 years. And the last, you know, six, you know, box office pictures they've released have just, you know, been tanked. I don't want to see that happen to Star Trek or Star Wars for that matter. You know, I want to see them be smart enough to hire good people who make good decisions and only produce quality products.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What time is it? Oh, yeah, we got time for another story. Yeah, we do.
Plenty of time.
And I think it's Paul who gets the next story.
All right, man. We continue on, which is actually, this is a really good story to continue on with off of what we were just talking about, because we're talking about the future of Star Trek next, from Star Trek Academy to new movies and Michelle Yeoh. While Paramount Pictures redoubles its efforts, more like Dexa Googles its efforts to get a Star Trek feature into theaters. You guys have been trying this nonsense for the last 10 years.
Oh, my God. It's so
How does
bad.
It work? Do you know how to load film in the camera? Well, I don't know, David. We don't really use film. Do you know what to do? What about the script? I like this script. Who's Quentin Tarantino? I don't know what's going on. I'm an old, I don't like it. I'm an F-bomb Star Trek.
This is exactly how it reads to us people.
Oh, my God.
Exactly like this conversation.
But they are, you know, again, our friend Kurtzman, God bless him, I hope you know what you're doing, and his production company Secret Hideout are pushing the boundaries of what Star Trek can look like on the small screen. You better push hard, would be my advice. Michelle Yeoh just wrapped filming the first Star Trek TV movie, Section 31, a spy thriller that the Oscar winner actress characterizes as Mission Impossible in space. Originally, the project was announced as a TV series centered on Philippa Georgiou, the semi-reformed tyrant Yeoh originated on Discovery. I think I would like to add that to my email signature,
semi-reformed
tyrant. Beautiful.
Between
COVID delays and the phenomenon of everything everywhere all at once, there wasn't room in the veteran actress's schedule to fit a season of television. Yet Yeoh was undaunted. We'd never let go of her, she says of her character. I was just blown away by all the different things I could do with her. Honestly, it was like, let's just get it done because I believe in this. So we need to find a producer who's like Michelle Yeoh, basically, because that's the attitude.
Get it done.
Yeah, and that's like you have somebody passionate about it who doesn't give up and loves the stuff. She's not in it just for the paycheck. She freaking digs it, and she wants to do it. She's fond of the property. A few minutes later, dozens of extras in all manner of outlandish evening wear filed into the club, several of them made up as the classic Star Trek aliens and fans might be surprised to see in this kind of swanky establishment. What kind of article is this? This is so confusing.
It's scary. I'm like, what's
wow,
happening?
Wow, it's like, yeah.
I think somebody's at a party and they're writing an article. I don't know.
Did this? I don't even know how this article got edited, but it's like, I may have to paraphrase. The Discovery, this person who wrote this is saying, is that Georgia was standing next to a young Rachel Garrett. This reads to me like an extremely briskly edited story about a premiere for the start of the recent season of Discovery, I suspect, because that's where we first found out that Rachel Garrett is going to be, you know, who we all know is Next Gen's, you know, fearless captain, Enterprise C, right? Was, they appeared together at that party. So my guess is that's what this is from. And again, here's referencing somebody who hasn't been mentioned earlier in this article. Osun Sanmi, that's one of the
directors,
frequent directors on the show, whose first name escapes me, grew up watching Next Generation with his father. It boils down to a simple question. Is it putting good into the world, he asks. Are these characters ultimately putting good into the world? And boy, this is what I'm reading makes no sense because it's been edited.
It doesn't, but it's a good question.
It's been edited so poorly. I mean, I'm kind of a little mortified at what news outlet this even came from.
It was done by AI.
Oh,
this does read like an AI article.
Like, wow. I think the person that we're trying to reference here, they don't mention them by first name, but is producer-director Olatunde Osunsanmi. That is the person that we're trying to talk about there, who's done a ton of work on Star Trek across many arms of the franchise there. So sorry, Olatunde. We don't mean disrespect. We just managed to copy-paste a really poorly edited article. But is it putting good into the world? He's talking about what he would like to see the stories focus on. Are these characters ultimately putting good into the world? And taking a step back, are we putting good into the world? Are we inspiring humans watching this to be good? That, for me, is what I've always admired about Star Trek. Should Section 31 prove to be successful, Michelle Yeoh says she's game for a sequel. And Kurtzman is already eyeing more opportunities for TV movies, including a possible follow-up to Picard. The franchise's gung-ho sojourn into stream... Gung-ho, we try not to say that anymore, friends. Really, we try not to say that anymore. Let's not use that turn of phrase obliquely. Into streaming movies, however, stands in awkward contrast to the persistent difficulty Paramount and Pictures and Abrams production company Bad Robot have had making a feature film following 2016's Star Trek Beyond, worst sentence I've ever read in my life. It's like this is like 75... How about we say this? Paramount Pictures has the development hell equivalent of erectile dysfunction. No matter what it is, they just can't launch their products. Okay? That's what's going on. And I'm just making this up as I go, okay? So it's just like, let's just, you know, call it what it is. That is the longest theaters have gone without a Star Trek movie since Paramount started making them, since 2016. I'm bad at math, but that sounds like 9 years to me. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, do you really want to be the one responsible for a 10-year gap? And the press release doesn't count as a movie. You know, I know recently said, hey, yeah, they've got the guy from Andor is coming on. He's going to do it. Yeah. Oh, really? Really?
Nicolas Cage will be the next bad guy.
Yeah,
well,
I don't know.
There have been some articles that have felt like they were kind of like we're not just reading articles from, you know, joescoolarticles.com. Like we're like we've seen many articles over many years now that all seem to point towards something cool happening, and then they all fizzle. Every last one of them. And I have to tell you, like you can't. You can't edge people forever, man. You got to need,
how do you screw,
it,
I mean,
right?
They were getting into business with Quentin Tarantino, who's no small name, right? He's a big name. I mean, it's just like, and, you know, okay, so maybe every now and then you make a picture that doesn't resonate with everybody, right? Like, you know, I mean, who knows? Section 31 certainly won't resonate with everyone, right? But if I got a chance to make a Quentin Tarantino script, I mean, I'm going to do whatever I got to do to get that sucker on and produced. I don't care who I offend. Get that and add that to your list of things you tried, right? And yeah, maybe it'll, but I guarantee you, people will at least show up for that movie. They'll be curious for that. They'll show up. He opens, when he opens a picture, it opens on weekends. That would have done, you know, maybe not everyone would have liked it, but it would have eventually been a success.
It would have at least made back what it took to make it. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
It certainly wouldn't have been boring. Right,
no.
which is you know that's my problem with half of the episodes of Picard and you know as much as I like it, half the episodes of Discovery, I'm not going back and watching those episodes a second or third time. It's a snooze fest.
Well, there
right
was
off,
I don't,
right. If it's a really good episode, like I you know I'll go watch it again and again and again. But most of these episodes, they're not getting repeat business from me, right? But I'm guaranteed something like that would have. So I hope that they can get it together. Take whatever is the equivalent of like, you know, production team Viagra. Take it. Take two. You know, do what you got to do. But like, you know, don't let so much time get away from you that you're bored, right? It's like, you know, that the audience is bored, right? And we're doubting your ability to even like make a commercial. So yeah, it's baffling. So it'll be hopefully we revisit this with something more tangible soon.
Uh-huh. Whoopi Goldberg dropped on The View that she's going to be in the next Star Trek movie and with Captain Picard. So I'm thinking that this is another made-for-TV movie that she's referring to. But she's going to be in the next movie. So
well, here's the thing, brother. I mean, you don't know for a fact that the next movie will even get made, right? People without it, who haven't signed an NDA love to say they're doing something, especially when they're, you know, on a talk show, right? They love to make it sound like they're busy and doing something. But that is not a guarantee by any stretch of the imagination. That's I had a Chardonnay in the green room after, you know, talking to my agent press release, right? Until it actually happens, until she's actually on a set, you know, let's be conservative with our belief that that actually is a thing. Because, you know, especially when Paramount's involved, the odds are really good that it ain't a thing. You know, so I'm skeptical. Very skeptical.
Well, we'll have to wait and see.
Yep.
We'll have to wait and see. So, David, what's going on with you?
I suppose I got the next segment of an article here. I hope it's not as weird as the other one, but here we go. You guys ready?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
All right, well, I guess we talked about this already, that Star Trek Strange New World hasn't even aired its third season, but it's getting a fourth. Possibly on 4th of July? You never know. Anyways, Paramount Plus has renewed Star Trek Strange New World for season four. Even though season three hasn't even aired yet, that's how well received the first two seasons of the original series prequel starring Anson Mount and Captain Christopher Pike have been. The series has taken big swings in episode storytelling, such as season two musical episode, Subspace Rhapsody, on behalf of the cast and crew of Strange New World. We are thrilled to grateful. We are thrilled and grateful to continue our voyage together, said showrunner Akiva Goldsman and Henry Alonzo Myers. Plus franchise overlord Alex Kurtzman.
Overlord.
In a joint statement, we can't wait for you to join us and the crew of the Enterprise on another season of exploration and adventure.
Generic statement. Cool. Well, I'm glad that it got renewed for a fourth season. Like, I do think Strange New Worlds is kicking it right now, and I do think that it's Star Trek that people want to watch. I don't think that it's – I think it's pushing minor boundaries. I don't think it's pushing major boundaries, but I am super glad that it's getting a fourth season,
so
personally.
So here's a question. Yeah, so I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm just wondering, what do you guys think would the reason being why they had put season three back a year or –
The writer's strike.
Yeah, dude, that set everything back by an entire year. Remember, the writer's strike was forever.
I guess I must have been taking a nap.
No, it was, I don't remember, Paul probably remembers how long the writer's strike was, but it was not quite 12 months, but it was probably like eight or nine months, maybe.
It was a long time.
It was a long-ass time.
And the problem is it was right on the heel with the actor's strike as well. SAG,
right,
I mean,
right.
Right up against each other. A lot of people took other kind of work. It just really made things crazy, and just schedules just were, you know, knocked asunder. So it really screwed things up, and it's just you have to coordinate so many cast members for a series. Oh.
Yeah, especially when they're doing other projects and stuff, because I would imagine that there's – remember, this is all tied into contracts, right? So, like, somebody's – schedule that's in their contract isn't met, and so therefore they're released to go do another thing, and while they're on the other thing, then they can't do the other thing that they were supposed to be doing. So it gets really complicated contractually. Thank you, American Litigious Society. Screw you. Sorry, did I say that out loud?
Okay. Your question, 5 months on the writer's strike.
Is that all it was? Man, it felt like
three years.
That's all
it was. 148 days.
Yeah, but it – okay, so it was 148 days, but there's the wind-up and there's the cool-down, and I would say that the effect of the writer's strike was probably a solid 9 months at least, would be my
guess. All because
somebody
didn't get ice cream.
No, that's not
why. plus you had the actor's strike that had to be solved also, which means they didn't do a whole lot after their strike was over till the other strike was over.
So AI took over and wrote
a... So
I know we don't have too much time left. We have like a minute and a half or something, but I just want to say that I'm very interested in at some point in the future about talking about the future of Star Trek, because now we literally have heard about every single thing that's coming out now. And so my question is, what comes post-Discovery? You know, is Strange New Worlds all we got? I know we've got the Section 31 movie. I don't really count that. That's like a two-hour event. What's our next series? What's our next, like, torchbearer who's going to carry this thing into the future? And it better be something cool and alternative like Star Trek Discovery, because Star Trek Discovery didn't – yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say that, like, Star Trek Discovery, to me, like – swung for the fences in every respect, didn't always get there, but man, I am going to respect this series forever. And I think that as time goes by, people are going to like it more and more. I'm just excited for what the next thing post Strange New Worlds is.
Yeah, I think a really cool episode would be that a series that would be taking place between Enterprise and TOS or Strange New World or Discovery in this matter.
I got to tell you guys, there's a really great article that I just posted on our Facebook page right before airtime talking about why Discovery is the best Star Trek series next to TOS as far as diversity and inclusion goes. And I posted that article because it's an article that I happen to 100% agree with. So because Discovery gets a lot of hate, and it's the most hated show. People love to rag on it. And read that article. I think you might like it. Well, guys, we're going to wrap up the show. I can't believe it. 2 hours came and went that fast, but
yeah.
It did. Next week, we'll be talking about the episode, which is on tonight. You guys can head over to our Facebook page tomorrow, give us your scores, and tell us what you thought about it. And next Thursday, we'll discuss it. So same bat time, same bat channel. So I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and I'm going to say thank you so much to Ryan for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you, Ryan. It was great to have you aboard, buddy.
Yeah, great. I know you guys are trying to sign off, but Jim, I'm the one that actually sent you that email a couple weeks ago as well. I don't know if we can talk about that maybe later and then figure out how to do that next week.
Yeah, that's
remember?
Fine. Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Not a problem, dude. And
thank you
so much. Yeah, no problem, Ryan. And thank you so much to Eric for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight. Thank you, Eric.
You bet, guys. Thanks as always.
And thank you to Paul for hanging out with us as well. Thank you, Paul.
Enjoyable, man. Thanks a bunch.
And thank you to David as well. Even though he didn't share the donuts with everybody, that's okay.
But now I want ice cream, but it was really fun.
The ice cream is always good. And thank you so much to Charles for hanging out and Trek talking with us as well. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, fun as always.
And I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying to everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. And remember, Star Trek fans are the best fans. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Adios.
Night, y'all.
Enjoy the weekend.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.
Reached the Q continuum. We are unable to get to the phone right now because we are busy living in a plane of existence your feeble mortal minds cannot possibly comprehend. Furthermore, it's pointless to leave a message because we, of course, already knew that you would call, and we simply do not care. Have a nice day.